Thank you for visiting theopenword.org, where you can find a verse-by-verse exposition of almost the entire Holy Bible and other theological resources. Welcome to the next part of the series from Alan Schaffer.
I like that point there, because see, here's the problem. There's a lot of people that say, I can do church on the internet. No, you can't. You can't. Okay, that's not church. I like what John MacArthur said. Internet church is not church. Church is where we get together like this and talk to one another and interact and share, and that's church. You know, you can be on the internet in your pajamas or your underwear and nobody knows what you're doing unless you got your accidentally turn your like camera on. Whoops. Don't want to do that. But the point is, we become disconnected. And we're not designed to be that. You know, what's that one Disney cartoon? The robot with Eve. Somebody help me here. They junked up the Earth, so they have these massive chips out there, and everybody's sitting on their little floating platform with their connection. Nobody talks to one another. They don't know how to talk to one another, but they spend all day long just on the computer. I forget the name of it. It'll come to me. That's what happens when you get old. You can't remember these things.
It's not Bugs Bunny.
No, it wasn't. It was one of the new ones. Wally, that's it. Wally. You know, and everybody's there on, I mean, they're actually floating by one another on these floating, and they're not talking to one another because they're talking on the computer, you know. And God's not designed us for that. God's designed us for community. All right? They can't walk. You know, they're so fat they can't walk, actually. They got to be, you know. We're getting that way. We're getting that way. You know, you go to an average restaurant, and what are people doing? Nobody's talking to one another. They're on their phone. Put the phone away. Yeah, put the phone away. You know? We need community. You know, so it's nice to go out in the grandeur of God's creation and hike. Dave, you'd have been proud of me. 105 degrees, and I still hiked. Yeah, arches. It was a boiler of a day. I made it though. I didn't. I said, if Dave can do this, I can do this. So I did. But yeah, it was good. It was good. I enjoy that out there. That's just great. I was gonna go by and visit them, but they were under a COVID alert. Well, it wasn't COVID. All right. Yeah, because I wasn't too far from you guys. I would have driven up there and said hi, but, you know.
I had it for a week and she had it.
Yeah. Because right now you can't get into the national parks unless you get like a pass, and there's all kinds of bizarreness you got to go through. Even you can't even get into the park unless you get a entry pass to get in.
Timed
entry pass. So you got to be there from 10 to 11 to get in the park. You know, and if you miss that, you don't get in. So it's irritating. Anyways, we're back in Romans chapter 7. We should get to probably do some of this, right? No, we didn't finish 7. We got through verse 12. And I know that because I listened to myself last night. So we got through. No, we got through somewhere around verse 12. We're going to pick up with 13. How's that? Because that's what I remember last. We did that? Well, we're going to do it again. How's that? Because you probably forgot everything I said. Well, what I have to do is compare what I said last time with what I said this time and see if it matches. What's that?
The reason I agreed that you didn't finish it is because Laura, who happens not to be here this morning, asked me a question about the very, I think it was verse 19, but anyhow, to a spot you hadn't yet gotten to.
Yeah.
And it, I ultimately told her, because you were gone from that point forward, I said, you'll probably pick up there
yeah.
when he gets back.
Well, we'll pick up with 13 because that's the connected section here. And so Paul, again, what is the context of Romans chapter 7? Well, Romans 6 and 7 is about sanctification, right? Which, by the way, is a necessary part of the Christian life. There are people today that disconnect your conduct with who you are. Remember, we talked about the identity crisis? People say they're a Christian, but they don't act like it. Well, I can be a Christian. I identify as a Christian. And Christ said in Matthew chapter 7, there's a lot of people that are going to identify as Christians in the last day, and what's his response to them going to be? I never knew you guys. I don't know who you are. It's not who you identify as, it's who you are that matters to God. And Paul is making the argument in Romans 6 and 7 that because you're justified by faith, you have peace with God, now act like it. Live it out. Don't you know that to whom you yield yourself servants to obey, his servants you are to whom you obey. How do you know who somebody worships? Well, what do they obey? You show me someone who's more interested in obeying the things of the world and doing the things of the world than the things of God, what does that tell you? Whose slave are they? They're not God's slave, right? Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do the things I tell you? And Paul's talking about this. And then in Romans 7, he goes on and he wants to explore this idea. Okay, so I'm a Christian, I'm a believer, I want to do the right thing. Why do I keep doing the wrong thing? That's part of all of our conundrum, isn't it? I want to do the right thing, I want to obey God, I want to be honor him. So why am I struggling with sin? Right, it's part of us, part of our humanness. And Paul starts out Romans 7 with this illustration of marriage. He says, you know, a woman is bound by the law to her husband as long as he is alive. But when he dies, she can marry someone else, and that's okay. And he uses that to illustrate how that we died to sin. How did we die to sin? Huh? Through Christ. We're identified with Christ in his death, his burial, his resurrection. When Christ died, we died with him. When he was buried, we were buried with him. When he rose again, we rose with him. Romans 6 is a dry verse. There's no water there for you Baptists. It has to do with spiritual baptism. And what Paul is saying is that just as a woman is freed, and this is just an illustration. Don't go there with the marriage business. That's not why that's there. The illustration is, a woman or a man is bound to their spouse as long as they're living. If they die, they're free to marry another. Paul says, you died to sin. Sin used to be your master. Sin used to be your husband, so to speak. You died to that. Now that you rose again, you are free to do what? To marry another who is Christ. You're free to have a new person. But problem is with sin, the indwelling sin. Therefore, verse 17 or 13 of Romans 7, did that which is good become a cause of death to me? What is good? What's the good thing he's talking about? Verse 12, the law is holy. The commandment is holy and just and good. He's saying the law is good. Law is not bad. You know, we play games. We have games that, you know, sports games and things like that. And what happens when you break a rule in the game? There's a penalty, right? I remember, and I forget what it was, there was a particular golf tournament that this very famous golfer was playing, and he accidentally committed an infraction that disqualified him. He had to take his clubs, walk off the course, and exit the tournament. Now, what could he have said? It was unfair. That rule's unfair. That's a bad rule. Is the rule bad? No. The infraction was the bad thing, see? See, we live in a day now where people don't like the rules, so the rules are bad. No. The rules aren't bad. You're bad. It's not the fault of the rule. It's your fault. Again, I remember watching the Winter Olympics, and the guy was going for the world speed skating record. He was on his way, and the film showed he accidentally touched the ice with the tip of his finger. Disqualified. Record's gone. Can't do that. I didn't know that, but you can't touch the ice with your finger. It wasn't intentional. It was accidental. Now, is the rule bad? Is the rule wrong? Is the rule evil? No. Paul is saying here, is the good law, did that which is good become a cause of death for me? No, and may it never be, no way. And what he's saying is, it's not the law's fault that it killed me. It's my fault. It's not the law's fault. Don't blame the law. Don't blame God. See, that's what we have, blame shifting today. It started in the garden, we still do it today. No one's responsible for their actions. It's interesting, I went flying yesterday, I was talking to my instructor, and he said, yeah, I just fired a student the other day. And I said, how do you fire a student? That's kind of hard to do. You know, when a student wants to come in and learn to fly a plane and drop $15,000 to learn to fly it, it's kind of hard to fire a student, right? He said, yeah, I talked to the owner of the flight school, and we both agreed, and we fired the student. I said, what in the world did you fire the student for? He said, nothing was ever his fault. You can't work with somebody. Nothing's ever his fault. You need to do this. Well, it's not my fault that it didn't do. You can't teach anybody. You want somebody, you want to fly in a plane with a pilot, then nothing's ever his fault. How about a doctor? Nothing's ever his fault. If you don't accept responsibility for yourself, you're sort of in a bad spot. And the problem is it's not the flight instructor's fault that you're not doing what you should do. It's your fault. Don't blame somebody else. Don't blame the plane. Don't blame this. Don't blame that. You take responsibility. Paul's saying the law's not bad. It's not the law's fault. Rather, it was sin, in order that it might be shown to be sin by working out my death through that which is good, so that through the commandment sin would become utterly sinful. Bottom line is, what did the law do? It exposed sin. And not only did it expose sin, but it really exposed it. Hyperbole, to really go beyond, to really expose it for what it is. It's not like, well, I had to look pretty hard to find it and see it in me. He said it was pretty obvious that it was there. What did the law do? It exposed my sinfulness. And not only did it expose it, it really exposed it. I couldn't miss it. Sin became exceedingly, what? Sinful. See, here's the thing. If you don't have the standard of God, you can make yourself out to be pretty good, right? I think I remember I used the illustration before we left here of, you know, I can go out and play golf with Denny and beat the living daylights out of him and, you know, think I'm pretty good. I go play with Tiger Woods and I could be an emotional basket case after the first hole. Why? I think I might be good, but you know what? Tiger Woods will expose just how bad I am, right? He'll be pretty quick to show me that. The commandment came so that it would really show me the true condition of my heart. You see, that was the problem with the Pharisees in Christ's day, was it not? See, they had a set of rules, but they made rules that they could keep. Right? They made rules they could keep. It's interesting, my friend Gary and I, we go play golf. All right, but we have this rule between us that we don't take more than a double bogey on a hole. All right, now I'll tell you what. If we didn't do that, our score would be about 20 strokes higher. All right. But now if I go play in a professional tournament, do I get to say, well, I'm not going to take more than a double bogey on a hole? No, what do? You count every stroke. There isn't any of this. Hey, let's lower the rules down a little bit to make ourselves look a little better. There's no wiggle room. In golf, you play the ball where it lies. You don't touch it. If it goes in a hole, you hit it out of the hole. You know, I mean, that's just. I saw the one where the ball got stuck up in the tree. Seriously, I'm not making it up. He had to climb up the tree to hit the ball out of the tree. He actually did. They had a pretty good shot out of the tree. But the point is, when we play games, we'll lower the standard down. Why? Because if we lower the standard down, it makes us feel better, look better, right? What did the Pharisees do? What did the religious leaders do? Well, we'll lower the standard down. And the problem is you keep cranking it down because you keep wanting to make yourself, you crank it down to this level and, man, I still don't look that good. Let's crank it down a little more to make myself look a little better. It's in the back of your mind. That's what you're doing. So some of the rabbis, and they've written down, said, well, this Ten Commandments stuff, we can't keep it. I'll tell you what, if we just keep one of them, it's good to keep all of them. What did James say? If you infract one of them, it's like you broke the whole thing, right? And then he said, well, that ain't working for us. We can't even keep one of them. Tell you what, if you intend to keep it, that counts. And we have a world full of people that just keep cranking the things down. You see this in public education, This is the level, that hurts a lot of kids, so let's crank it down. Let's make it easier for them. And I just read somewhere where there's some school district, I guess, somewhere that no longer can they penalize students for being tardy or late if they're of a minority status. You've changed all the rules. If you're a minority, you don't have to show up to school. You don't have to, if you're late, you can't penalize any student for that. It is, but the point is, here's the point I'm trying to make. We as human beings, we want to change the rules down. We want to make them lower so that we can meet them, especially when it comes to the Word of God. We want to make a law of God a standard that we can hit because it makes us feel good to hit it, We can.
And today's age, the way in which society is doing that, because it doesn't like the law / the rules, is they have come up with my truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bump the Bible, bump this Christianity stuff, bump all those stupid, outdated, ancient rules.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just, what works for me is right.
Yep. And that happens morally in the moral world, but you see that happening also all over the place. In the academic world. Do you want to go to a doctor and have him operate on you when he passed because he wasn't allowed to get a failing grade because he was a minority? Well, okay. You got the pancreas and the spleen mixed up, but we're going to pass over that because, really?
I sure hope what you
did. I think it was out there. There was something. I saw it somewhere. Of course, everything you see on the internet's true, right? Yeah, not really. But I don't, and again, that's just. But that's sort of where we're headed, is it not?
It's an insult to us.
It's an insult. It is. It's an insult to people that say, well, because you're this, we're going to lower the standard for you from everybody else. You don't do that. All right? But the world does that. And the Pharisees did that because they said, we can't keep this law. We're going to lower the standard. We'll just keep cranking it down until we can meet it. And then we can pat ourselves on the back because we're godly people. But what did God say? Things are going to get worse and worse, not better and better. Right?
This was not here 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And they all think if you just go with your feelings, yep, it's all sin.
Well, see, that's the thing that Paul's trying to get at here. God's law is the perfect standard. But what we want is we want a standard we can meet. So the way to do that is either A, create a new standard, or B, we say the standard that God gave us is an unfair standard. It's unfair. Okay? It's not fair. Okay? And Paul is saying, listen, the commandment is good. The problem is not the commandment. The problem is me. For we know that the law is what? Verse 14, spiritual. Pneumatikos, it's of the spirit. The law is a good thing. But I am sarkikos, fleshly. What does it mean to be fleshly? By the way, this is the only time this word is used in the New Testament. Okay? It just means I am fleshy. Now, in the Bible, what is the flesh a reference to? Your fallenness. Not your sin nature, it's your fallenness. Right? What happened to your sin nature when you became a Christian? Died. Your sin nature is dead, but what do you still have? You have your flesh, right? And isn't that what Paul's been saying? The sin which lies in our what? Members. The members of our body. Our fallenness. We still got that. All right? I don't believe, you know, and this goes back to many years ago when you had this idea, well, you know, you've got an old nature and a new nature as Christians. You know, as an unbeliever, you just got an old nature. As a Christian, you got the old and the new, and they're constantly at war. But the Scripture says, if any man be in Christ, he is a what? New creation. That's not new in sense of time. It's new in sense of quality, of essence. You don't have an old nature, but you have a new nature and an old flesh, a shell. You got it. And we got some old wineskins around, don't we? And that's where the struggle lies. The struggle is with our flesh, our fallenness. Paul says, I am fleshy. I'm stuck in this, he's going to call it body of sin. Having been sold into bondage under sin, the word, that's perfect tense. It means I was sold and I continued to suffer the effects of that. It's like a slave. I was sold to sin. When did that happen for the human race? At the fall. We were sold to sin, aren't we? But we no longer have that as a master. We have been freed from that. But Paul says, you know, my body, it's incorrigible. It's not cooperating. It's very uncooperative. The sin that dwells in my members is uncooperative. Well, the point is, we don't want to be going around poking people in the eye.
Right.
All right? But Christ didn't do that, did he?
Right.
But he never let down the truth.
Right.
But we live in a world here, what Paul's talking about here, that sin principle in us, in the world, but in believers, works its way out in all kinds of different ways. And it's because we are fleshy. We have sin in our members. And Paul is saying, I am in bondage to sin. And that's the thing the world doesn't understand. They think, well, we're free. We're free to do this. We're free to do that. We're free to do that. And it's like, well, no, you're not free. Think of a fish that goes into a pond. Pond may be always, I'm free. No, you're not. You're in a pond. You're not free, like out in the ocean. You're in a pond. Think of Shamu. Donna called it shampoo. You know, the killer whale, you know, at SeaWorld. You know, I'm free. No, you're not. You're in a big aquarium. We think we're free, but we're not. And Paul is saying, I'm in bondage to sin. My flesh is. For what I am, for what I'm working out, I don't understand. For I'm not practicing what I would like to do, but I'm doing the very thing I hate. Here's his quandary. He said, I don't know what's going on. The things I want to do, I'm not doing. The things I don't want to do, I am practicing. Now, some have suggested, you know, there's been a lot of noise on this passage saying, well, is Paul talking about an unbeliever? That's it. He must be talking about an unbeliever. Others say, is Paul talking about a carnal Christian? That's the old 1970s idea that you can be a Christian, a carnal Christian, or an unbeliever. There's a third category of being. No, there's not. You're a Christian or you're not. You're pregnant or you're not pregnant. You're not in between. You're a Christian or you're not a Christian. Or maybe he's talking about a Christian here. And I think the text would suggest that he's talking about himself.
Yeah, he says it's about himself.
I mean, well, the problem is you got people that need to get a PhD so they write a thesis on Paul's talking about something other than what he's obviously talking about. That's sort of being a little snarky here. No, Paul's talking about himself. He said, the things I want to do, I don't do. How many of you in here do things you don't want to do? How many of you don't do the things you want to do? Welcome. Welcome to being fleshy, right? Now, on a scale of godly people on the planet, where was Paul? To the top of the list or to the bottom of the list? Probably towards, from a human perspective, probably sort of towards the top. And what's his struggle? I'm not doing what I want to do. I'm not practicing that. In fact, the things I don't want to do, I find myself, I still keep doing those things. He was at the bottom, wasn't he?
Yeah, I'm the chief of sinners.
I'm at the bottom.
Yeah.
And that's part of the paradox. The more godly you think you are, the less likely you are to be godly.
That's right.
It's the opposite way around, right? Was John a pretty godly apostle? Yeah, but when he saw the risen Christ in Revelation, what happened? Had to pick him up off the ground, right? Was Isaiah a pretty godly prophet? When we saw the Lord high and lifted up, what happened to him? Damn me, I'm done. This is not good. That's the Hebrew. Damn me. I don't get to say it much, so that's, you know,
Yeah.
But that's really what he said. I am. And when Peter, depart from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. Paul's saying the things I don't want to do, I do, and I'm doing the very thing I hate. But if I do the very thing I do not want, I agree with the law that it is good. He said, I am agreeing with the law because I hate doing this. The law says I shouldn't do this. I keep doing it. So I agree with the law, which is good, that I shouldn't be doing this. Again, the law is not the problem. Our problem today is we want to change the law to make it fit my lifestyle. The problem is you just keep cranking it down. You keep cranking the restrictions down.
We want to make the mirror show us as glamorous as we could look.
That's right. And you know, it's really cool because you take a picture of yourself on your phone and you can hit a button and make yourself look like 10 years better, right? Like something you're not even, doesn't even exist. We like to make ourselves look good. We like to put on a facade. We like to make ourselves, we like to think of ourselves as better than we are. And Paul is saying, here's my problem. The law is good. The problem is me. And just because I do the things I hate, it's not the law's fault. The law is good. So now no longer am I the one working it out, but sin which dwells in me. Now let's understand what he's saying here. He's not saying, well, the devil made me do it, so I'm not responsible, I'm okay. What is he saying? What is driving him to do the things he doesn't want to do? The sin that is in him, but it's still his what? It's still his fault. Paul is saying, I really want to do the right thing. How many in here woke up this morning and say, you know, I really want to sin today? How can I do that? No, but did you wake up with the intentionality? I want to sin. I want to do something evil. No. We wake up wanting to do the right thing. And how quickly do we fail? Well, I usually sin between the bed and the coffee pot. That's when I commit my first sin of the day. Why? Because it's the sin principle in me that's dragging me down. He's not trying to say it's not my fault. That's the point here. You know, don't go to things saying, well, he's trying to get out of, wiggle out of the fact that it's him. Because, you know, there are people that say that. There are people that you look at and you say, wow, man, how can you live in sin? Well, that's just my body. I can't do anything about it. You know, it's just going to do what it's going to do. But I'm okay because I'm spiritual. Well, that's what's happened in Corinth, right? In Corinth, the Corinthians were saying, the body for food, food for body. You know, come on, you know, just the body is... They've bought in the philosophical dualism. Matter is evil, spirit is good. The body's matter. I can't do anything about it. It's going to sin. So have at it. You know, you want to commit immorality. You want to do all the sin. That's okay. Because I'm okay because I'm the spiritual person. I'm okay. God's okay with me. It doesn't matter what my body does. Paul is saying, no, wait a minute. It's my fault. Here's the point. You're never going to get on the road to sanctification until you understand it's your fault. Sin is your fault. Don't blame the devil. Don't blame a demon. Don't blame your genetic coding. Don't blame your environment. Don't blame your husband or your wife or your kids. It's your fault. You're responsible. And what Paul's going to do, and we're done... We're going to have to quit this week. That clock is off, by the way.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah, that clock is slow, all right? But we'll pick up next week. The idea here is that, listen, it is our responsibility. We take responsibility. And until you take responsibility, God can't help you, right? If you don't want to admit you're a sinner, can you be saved? No, because you don't need anything, right? And that was the problem with the Pharisees. Think about this. When Christ talked to the Pharisees, they said, well, you guys have no sin, so you're fine. Now, that's not a statement of truth. That's a statement of sarcasm, is it not? Because in the Pharisees' mind, what was they thinking? They were okay. And Christ said, well, if you think you're okay, you're fine. That was just a sarcastic way of him making the point. So Paul's going to talk about this. Read over this text this week and think about it. Because it's very important that we understand the conflict within us and how we can get on this road to sanctification, which is a bad word in today's evangelical circles now even. You've got people that say they're a pastor, but they're living in sin, but that's okay. No, it's not okay. Father, thanks for today and for the time we've gotten back in the book of Romans. I pray that you help us to ponder what we've talked about today. Help us to all realize that we're fleshly, we're sold under sin. But when we make decisions, it's our fault, not yours. It's not your law, it's not you. It's not the standard that's the issue, it's our inability that's the issue. Help us to think about this, that we may be godly men and women who accept responsibility and who turn to you for help. Godly. Thank you again for this day and for the service to come in Christ's name.
Thank you for listening. This podcast was made in part with creative consulting and production assistance by Third Mass Studio. For your production needs, send an email to thirdmassstudio@gmail.com. For other lectures in this series and more biblical media resources, visit theopenword.org.